After America and Israel went to war against Iran in February this year, a vast amount of the analysis and discussion has been focused on the economic consequences for the rest of the world and the short and long-term impact of things like the price of oil and other key commodities. But for the 1.73 million people born in Iran, but who now live outside the country of their birth, discussions and the thoughts and feelings around them are very different. Our next guest is one of those people. Majon Massamaparast is a poet and English teacher from Melbourne who was born in Abadan, Iran, in 1979, the year, of course, of the Islamic Revolution. And Majon wrote in the June issue of the Australian Book Review a piece called When People Ask Me About the, quotes, situation in Iran. And I'm very pleased to say that we've got the opportunity to ask Majon about that now. Majon, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Hi, Julian. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
It's a pleasure. Your piece hinges on a particular concept, the concept of vatan. So, Majon, what does vatan mean, particularly to people of the Iranian diaspora?
Julian, I guess I can only speak for myself here, but as I explained in the piece, the concept of vatan is very much this notion of the homeland. The notion of the homeland that you are connected to, not just obviously by way of your documentation, but really by way of family, land, memories, history, ancestry. You know, I think as Australians, we can perhaps consider this concept of country, capital C country, and that might give us a little bit of a way in to that, the concept of the vatan.
I mentioned you were born in the year of the revolution. I wonder, Majon, if you could tell us a little bit about your childhood in Iran and how it ended.
Yes. So I was born in Abadan, but I really have no memories of that place whatsoever, because I was one when the war with Iraq broke out. And Abadan, being right on the Persian Gulf, was one of the first cities to be bombed out. Really, I can only tell you the stories that my parents have told me of that experience, which is my parents had a beautiful house and they had really just started their lives there together. And then they had to flee. And they were in a position to flee to the capital, Tehran, because we had access to petrol. My father worked at the Anglo-Iranian oil company there, and so we were able to get out. And it's really interesting because last year, I think it was, when we had the 12-day war with Israel and people were fleeing from Tehran, my dad made a comment, you know, look, everyone's retracing our steps but doing it in reverse. Then my memories really are of Tehran, and they're memories that a child, I think, keeps forms. So I mentioned in the piece that I always felt like my childhood was quite commonplace. You know, we had the shrapnel wounds in the fridge, and it took me a while to actually figure out that not everybody had the remnants of war in their kitchen. And I remember being with family a lot in Tehran. I remember going on picnics. I remember my parents used to take me to the park a lot. I remember, you know, eating strawberry ice cream and playing in the park, going on holidays to close to the Caspian Sea. So I have some very positive memories. And then I have those memories which, obviously, there's an element of trauma there, and so you retain those instances, such as we were all gathered at my aunt's house and the soldiers just burst in through the door and they came marching in and my mum took me into the kitchen and gave me a glass of water. So those are the memories, and I would say that, you know, it was very much a family-oriented childhood, interspersed with, you know, a few incidents that you wouldn't ordinarily associate perhaps with a very common way of growing up.
And then, of course, you had to leave, and that split up the family for some time.
That's right.
How did that happen, Marjan?
So all I can tell you is that I was woken up. To me, it was in the middle of the night. You know, it could have been 8 p.m. And this is really what I'd like to emphasize, that we all know that our memory is so unreliable. Mm. But these are the things that I remember, and I'm not sure to what extent they are factually true. But, you know, I was sleeping, so to me it was the middle of the night, and we went to the airport. What I really remember of that experience is the very long queue of people sort of around the big space in the airport waiting to, I don't know, check in maybe. And I was with my mum, and my mum and I were in the line, and my dad was in a completely different area, and I kept running back and forth between the two of them. And as I said, I was five, and all I knew was that my mother and I were going somewhere and my dad wasn't coming. And then mum and I got on a plane. And again, I had no concept of different countries, geographies, where we were going and what that entailed. I'd never been on a plane before. And so from, you know, the line in the airport, the next thing I remember is being on a plane with my mum and tugging at her headscarf and saying, you know, you can take this off now. You don't need to wear this anymore. And she, you know, was in quite a desperate sort of rush to pull it back over her head. It occurs to me now that we must have still been flying over Iranian airspace. And then the next thing I remember was landing in what turned out to be Italy and meeting my uncle, who I had never met before. He had a very, very long black beard and very, very long black hair. And he was about 20 at the time. And he gave me a little Kinder Surprise. And again, I bit down on the Kinder Surprise, and I didn't know that there was something in it.
But Marjan, as you said, after leaving your father, it was a couple of years until you saw him again. And then eventually your family made your way to Australia and built a life in Australia. Obviously, events in Iran since then, there have been so many tragic and controversial events that have taken place. But you focus obviously in your essay on the period since the 28th of February and report some of the range of responses that have emerged within your family circle since the war began. Could you give us a sense of what some of the range of those views is?
What actually ended up happening in terms of me writing the essay was I had a great opportunity through the Australian Book Review. I sort of pitched an idea to Georgina Arnott, the editor there, and she very generously gave me this space to really tease out the complexity of the kind of the emotional response to what's happening in Iran. And that's primarily what I wanted to convey, that even within one very extended family, you know, that there are so many interpretations, personal interpretations, and they're all, you cannot really you can't tease out, you can't separate the personal experience from the personal response. So I think of somebody like my grandmother, for example, who's 91 and who lived in Iran for more than 60 years of her life, and she's in Australia now. She has a very different response to what's happening in Iran to somebody like me who, you know, I left when I was five. For her, there is such a great investment in what happens in Iran because she wants to return. And she wants to see her homeland liberated. And for somebody like me, who perhaps has been raised in the West, there are other factors that come into the picture. You know, that there are other perhaps responses that we have to the political machinations and motivations that perhaps might be compelling these sorts of actions in Iran, and the external interventions in Iran. For some other people, you know, the means kind of justify the ends. So it's very tricky. And what I really wanted to also do was, because within my family, as I mentioned in the essay, there are a range of these backgrounds. So, for example, my uncle, who I mention in the article, his background, he was a very kind of active communist at the time, and he will come into conflict even with his own mother in terms of the situation there at the moment. I ended up interviewing quite extensively about 8 members of my extended family, and I should say that my father is one of 11 and my mum is one of 4.
Sounds like you didn't even scratch the surface, Marja.
I didn't. So, and I deliberately didn't identify the voices, but wanted to highlight, really, especially through those snippets that come through in the essay, the kind of the competing responses and opinions, and what it's like to be perhaps sitting in a family room or reading through a chat and having everyone chiming in with a whole set of different responses. Yeah, hey, you know, this is great. Oh, my God, this is terrible. Iran will be free soon. Oh, it's never going to happen. And I sit back and I think, you know, this has always been in the background, even though I've lived my life predominantly in Australia. What is happening, the situation in Iran, if you like, is always there ticking along in the background. And for 47 years, on the surface, nothing really has changed. So I will wait to see when that change comes. I'm not going to personally jump to any conclusions, but I think it is important to be hopeful. And I think it is important to appreciate that things take time and then perhaps tumble in a moment, and also that whatever the end result is, it's built upon the sacrifices of a lot of people. And I think that is something else that is always at the back of my mind, that, you know, I mean, we might think of it a little bit as survivor's guilt, that idea that here I am. And in the essay, I write about my mum and I being in Sydney while those protests and the massacres were happening in January. And we were taking our 3 or 4 days in Sydney. It was sunny and beautiful. And what was happening there in the background? So I think for me, certainly, I know that I owe a lot of my freedom to the sacrifice of people over there.
And that anecdote, I think, perhaps sums up something that you say towards the end of the piece, Marjan, that for all the different perspectives and experiences and worldviews that you chart, even within a small group in your family, you say that every displaced person walks with 2 worlds inside. I wonder if you could speak just a little bit more to that idea.
I think that anybody who has multiple, I would say, identities is not quite, sort of flattens it, but anybody who lives a life here but understands that they owe their place here to something that is or has happened over there. I think that what that means is that, you know, you live your life wherever you are. You go to work, you partake of whatever freedoms you might have access to and can enjoy. But you're always thinking about the people who are over there and the shadow that they're having to live under. And this is interesting because people respond to this differently. You know, someone within my family might say, you know, I can't enjoy the life that I have in Melbourne. I won't go out. I'll sit and watch the news and be overcome continually. And somebody else might say, I can't look back. I need to just look forward. And somebody else might say, and perhaps that is me, you know, I engage in my work. I engage, you know, with my friends. I go on my overseas holiday, but I am mindful that that comes at a cost to other people. And I think that this is a very common experience that especially in Australia where, you know, we only have to think of the kind of multiplicity of people who inhabit that land and what might be happening in different parts of the world right now, and how that impacts people who are living in Australia. Perhaps the stories that are emerging in Australia about Palestine, about Syria, you know, thinking about our own Indigenous communities. These are all displaced people. And I think that for me, that means that there is a here and there is a there and there is a space in between. And that space in between is always a little fraught.
Well, let's come back to that concept of Vatan then, the homeland. You write that every exile has their own personal Vatan. Marjan, what's your personal Vatan?
For me, Australia is home. When I think of where I like to go back to, it's always Australia. And, you know, I grew up there. I've travelled extensively through there. My stories have taken place on that land. And, of course, that's the place that gave me shelter. So that is my number one place that I always return to. In terms of thinking about living my life, the question for me always comes back to how am I contributing to building the community that I live in? There is so much destruction happening in the world, but how am I building where I am? And how am I helping to create these spaces of understanding? Spaces of empowerment. And I think that, you know, as a teacher, that is really what I've devoted, you know, 22 years of my life to doing, to really building where I am and contributing to that community. Of course, my Vatan is also Iran, but in a very different way, for example, to my grandmother, whom I mentioned before. Who lived, you know, seven decades of her life there and who longs to return. I do want to go back and I, you know, I don't think it's surprising. I'd like to see where I was born. I'd like to revisit some of the places that, you know, that the parks really are probably the only places that I could tell you from Tehran. But, you know, I am in Europe at the moment and I spent a month in Italy and that also is my homeland in many ways. I returned to the town Tortona that I started school in. I did a little bit of kindergarten and grade one and grade two in Tortona. So it's important for me to go back there from time to time. And I also have spent 4 years living in China. So I need to go back there every so often and just walk around, walk through the streets where I have history. And I think that that is what Vatan comes down to. Where is your history? Where are your memories? Where are your people? And for me, by circumstance, they happen to be in a number of different places.
Marjan Masamaparast, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Thank you so much, Julian, for your time.
And Marjan is a poet and English teacher currently traveling through Europe, and she wrote an essay in the June issue of the Australian Book Review called When People Ask Me About the Situation in Iran.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.